FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's August 9th, 2017. The days just roll right by, and so does the ever-increasing stock market. And why is it going up when certainly fundamentals don't look all that promising? Oh, before I forget, just email us any questions, kl@kerrylutz.com. And so is the explanation for the stock market's continual increases over the past however many years since the financial crash? What is it? Is it just human instinct, animal spirits, or is there something further? Well, David Scranton is with us. He's a CFA. David, you've been around for quite a while, over 30 years, and we see you all over the place on the media. Your specialty is being protective of your clients' assets. Sounds like you're an anomaly on Wall Street, but welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. And you're right, I am an anomaly, which is why my office is not on Wall Street.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people like you in that regard. So what's going on with this market here? You seem to indicate that there's gambling in this house. There's gambling? I'm shocked, right?
Shocking. Imagine that, right?
Yeah.
It's you know, people lost sight of that, that really investing in the stock market is gambling, pure and simple. It always has been. And, you know, sometimes if the odds are in your favor, well, that's not the worst thing in the world. But when you get times like this, when the markets are breaking new record highs almost every day, and it doesn't seem to be justified with fundamentals, you indicated earlier, it becomes a real problem. And, you know, when I talk about gambling, you know, being from the Northeast originally, and please don't hate me for this, but I'm a Patriots fan. And
we won't hold it against you. Don't worry, David.
Thank you for that. But it's funny because, you know, the analogy I make is people say, well, you know, Warren Buffett's a great, you know, a great stock picker. You know, he's a great guru with that. And I say, well, no, Warren Buffett's not a great stock picker. He's a great buyer of companies. And there's a difference. You know, to say that your average investor is like Warren Buffett is like saying that your average sports fan that bets on the Patriots is just like Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots. Because, gee, well, if the Patriots win, that guy who's betting on the game wins and Robert Kraft makes money also. Well, that comparison is obviously very, very inadequate because Robert Kraft is investing. He owns the team. He can control play, strategy, who the coaches are, who the players are. He's investing, just like Warren Buffett's investing when he's buying companies. But your average person that goes on FanDuel, for example, and bets on a game, he's not investing, he's gambling. And the same is true with your average investor that buys minority shares of stock. They don't have any control. They're just gambling, plain and simple. They're not like a Warren Buffett who actually has some control over corporate strategy. Even if Warren Buffett buys 20% of a company and gets a couple seats on a board, he still has some control, whereas the average investor has none.
Right. And it's interesting you say that. So I guess what we need is Stock Gamblers Anonymous, SGA, for all the many people who've lost fortunes in the market and will lose fortunes in the future. So are there 12 steps for this program to get off of gambling on Wall Street, or is it easier than that?
Well, luckily, it's easier than that. It doesn't require 12 steps. You know, you said before that I focus on protecting people's money. Well, the reality of it is, how do we do that? We do that with primarily fixed income strategies. And, you know, most investors have lost sight of fixed income because most investors today got most of their experience investing in the 80s and 90s, the best stock market in U.S. history. And during the 80s and 90s, all you needed were two tools to do well with your portfolio. You needed the stock market, you know, which is mutual funds or individual stocks, and you needed bank accounts. You know, you could get, remember the days, 5.25% on a passport, what they used to call a passbook savings account, right?
Gone are the days. Yeah, I remember at one time during the Reagan era, they were up in the double digits, and you could buy bonds, anything that was yielding 12, 14, 15%.
Right. But most people didn't bother because they didn't need to. They said, well, we got the stock market, which is raging ahead through the 80s and 90s, and we have bank CDs that are getting competitive returns. So they were able to stick to, most investors were able to stick with the bookends of investment, the bank CDs that are FDIC insured, and on the other end, the stock market. And both those tools did very well through the 80s and 90s. And unfortunately, that means we have a generation of investors that has lost sight of the fact that there's a whole universe of income generating options that sit somewhere between the bookends. And this is the universe, which I kind of broadly stamp with the moniker, you know, bonds and bond-like instruments. And the reality, though, is these are things that have existed for decades and decades and decades. These are things that your average person who's retired or approaching retirement would focus on in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s. We just lost sight of it in the 80s and 90s because the bookends served us too well. You know, it's an analogy I make is, you know, if I want to remove a nut from a bolt, most of the time I can do that with two pliers. But, you know, there are some times when the bolt is rusted on and I can't do it with pliers. I need to get a wrench. And that's how I think the average investor was for that 20-year period, where they had the two pliers that worked fine for a long time. It just now they need new tools in their toolbox, or really they need to take out and dust off all the old tools that have existed forever and actually start to use those. Would probably be a more appropriate way to say it.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I go back to Benjamin Graham, the father of modern portfolio theory analysis, you know,
sure.
that a stock should trade basically based on its future dividend flow, discounted the dividend discount model. And this is kind of old fashioned. But if we went back to that, there's very few sectors of the stock market that you want to touch. And what he said was the difference between an investor and a speculator is the investor looks at the company to figure out their cash flows, et cetera. That's investing. Anything else is speculation.
Yes. And I believe he was also the one who said that the stock market's interesting because, you know, he teaches people to be realists. But most of the time, what you have is you have a bunch of optimists buying from a bunch of pessimists. And in a way, without using the word animal spirits, as you did earlier on, that's what he was saying, is that most investors work on animal spirits, whether it's the optimism or the pessimism.
Yeah. And so true. So how do you know if you're a gambler? I mean, you think the way that they've redefined the word investor, now investor means gambler. So how do you know that you're a gambler, David?
Well, it's interesting because think of it this way. You know, and a lot of your listeners know also that if you were to buy 51% of a company, you have to pay a lot more than if you bought only 49%. So, for example, let's say that there were a company worth $1 million. And, you know, 51% wouldn't cost you $510,000 and 49 wouldn't cost you $490,000. More appropriately, 51% might cost you $700,000 and 49% would only cost you $300,000. Why? Because there's always a huge premium for control. Okay? So now you have to think about when you turn on CNBC, you read the Wall Street Journal, and you hear that one publicly traded company is making an offer to buy majority of shares from another. It's never at twice the price, like the example I just gave you. It's always at maybe a 5 or 10% premium, right? So if corporate America is willing to pay only a 5 or 10% premium for controlling interest of another company, but yet when you're buying a small company, it doesn't work that way. And to me, that means in corporate America on Wall Street, one of two things are happening. Either the board members of the selling company are accepting too little when they get purchased because they're accepting only a 5 or 10% premium, not 100% premium, or more likely the average investor is overpaying every day when he or she buys minority interest in corporations. Yeah. And I think it's more likely that, you know, the average investor is the one that's been overpaying than the board members are accepting a raw deal. And that's always been the case. I'm just pointing out that that's always been the way the markets work. And most of the time, it doesn't really rear its ugly head, so to speak. It works out okay. But every once in a while, when things get overvalued, that's when you get, you know, the balloon bursting. And right now, I feel like the market is an overinflated balloon in search of a needle.
So what you're really describing, David, is the greater fool theory. It's like, yeah, I know I'm overpaying for this and I'm probably getting ripped off, but there's another fool out there who will pay even more than me. And as long as that's the case, then everything is great. But when you run out of greater fools, what then?
Right. That's right. But it's become just the way Wall Street works. So we've come to accept it. And that's why I say, even though it is gambling, most of the time it can work okay. And it's made, you know, tons of money for investors across the country. But it's become a more socially acceptable way of gambling. It's like, you know, many in the medical profession would say that alcohol is worse for someone than smoking marijuana. But the alcohol is socially acceptable and the marijuana isn't. And it's very much, I believe, the same thing true about the stock market. It may not be as socially acceptable to go to the casino as it is to invest in the stock market.
Yeah. Well, it's become a lot more acceptable to go to the casino in recent years. And it's become very acceptable to go bet in the Wall Street casino, where they make all the rules and the house has got even more of an edge than in Vegas. At least in Vegas, the government says you can only have this much edge. In Wall Street, though, the edge is literally unlimited.
You know, Ed, that's interesting insight. I had never thought of it from that perspective, but you're absolutely right. In some ways, the casinos are more regulated than Wall Street, and that's a scary thought.
Yeah, and the only thing the casinos can do that, well, Wall Street does it, but in a different way, is they give you free drinks because they know that it's going to affect your decision-making process. Wall Street spins these yarns and tells these tales that are intoxicating in their own right and lock into your emotion of greed, looking for the mana from heaven returns. And the reality is just so much different.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. My first book, the subtitle is Let's Keep Wall Street's Cancer from Spreading to Your Portfolio. The subtitle of the first book. And, you know, the analogy that I make is that, you know, cancer starts with one mutated cell and then spreads. And in this case, the mutated cell, I believe, is that the fiduciary duty of a Wall Street CEO is to his shareholders, not his customers or clients. And, you know, that cancer then spreads vertically through an organization, to the research department, to the managers, the sales force, and spreads horizontally to the media, because the media needs to keep these Wall Street happy so they can continue to advertise. And then spreads horizontally to the schools that teach financial advisors themselves, because the reality is those schools need the Wall Street firms to send their new reps there so that they can get tuition. So I believe it truly is spread like a cancer. And it's not as bad because it's, you know, a lot of people made a lot of money, but I think people have forgotten the fact, you know, forgotten why it's become so socially acceptable. And it's really taken on a life of its own.
Yeah. And they've forgotten that there's a lot of risk out there that's disguised. And, you know, that we have these financial calamities periodically. And that's the moment where you find out that, that hedge fund wasn't so safe. They didn't have all the answers. We saw it in 08 and 09. No doubt we're going to see it again, aren't we?
Yeah, we will. We will. I mean, it's happened periodically throughout history. It's going to happen again at some point. You know, we don't know when. I'm kind of surprised we didn't have a pretty significant pullback already. But, you know, the reality of it is history tells us that we need to have at least a 35 or 40% pullback from where we are today, because we have to get at some point break down below that what they call resistance level or glass ceiling that was on top of the market all the way from 2000 to 2013. And you know, when's that going to happen? Nobody knows. But you know, 35 to 40% is going to affect a lot of Americans adversely. Americans who are a few years older now than they were during the financial crisis and who could probably afford these losses a lot less than even before.
Yeah. And it was devastating to so many of you out there the last time. And here we are. Deja vu all over again, David. And I guess the conservative approach, the safe approach, you know, you never go wrong taking a profit, right?
Absolutely. That's what I love about investing for fixed income. You know, it's the bird in the hand. You know, when you buy a stock, you have to make three decisions right. You have to buy it right, it has to go up in value, and you have to sell it right. Well, when you buy a bond or bond-like instrument, you have to make one decision. You have to buy it right.
Yeah.
And then it keeps paying you. A little bit more bird in the handish.
Yeah, and just one other thing about fixed income investing. because rates have been in a secular bear market, meaning they've been going down for 30 years, just about, you actually could get capital gains from your fixed income investing, although that wasn't your intent. That was kind of a byproduct of the strategy. I don't know if any research has been done to actually figure out how much gains fixed income investors got, capital gains, but it was quite substantial over the past 30 years, and that could be changing as well. So it's always things to be considering, right?
Absolutely, and you're right. Actually, the last since 1981, when interest rates peaked, fixed income has had a tailwind. So I tell people now that tailwind is stopped, and at some point you'll feel a bit of a headwind. I'm not expecting those gains to continue with any imagination. However, I do believe that with the right active management, people can still get a competitive yield on fixed income. And at the end of the day, it's the bird in the hand. You know, we all know rental property is generally considered to be safer than, you know, speculative real estate or flipping homes. And the reason is because that rental income makes it so. And the same is true with investment.
A great point. And we're in for a change in the wind, the tailwind, as you said, which has been behind stocks for so many years now. That's going to change. And I don't think many of you out there are prepared for it. Hey, David, we want to find out more about you, your book, et cetera. Best place?
Okay. Best place, you can go to soundincomestrategies.com. Soundincomestrategies.com is our company. And the book has its own website, returnonprincipal.com.
Hey, which is what you really need to be thinking about, return of principal. Things could get very hairy very fast in the market. They turn on a dime. Just remember 08, 09, how quickly they went down before the external forces stepped in to arrest the decline. And I think we're still seeing that now. Hey, questions, comments on this interview or any others, email me at kl@carrylutz.com. Check out David's book. It's definitely must reading. And the Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. David, always great to have you on the show. We will talk to you again real soon.
All right. Thanks for having me. Look forward to it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.